Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Peter Paul on the middle of September 15th. Interesting day today. Of course, we have acorn, that rotten tree with its roots all over the country. But September 15th had some interesting birthdays, since we're very much aware of Obama as a mediagenic personality, political personality. Today is the birthday of one of the most interesting presidents who, because he's had more government positions than any other president in history so far in the United States, and that is William Howard Taft, he was also the biggest president, physically over 300 pounds. He had to have a special bathtub constructed for him in the White House. He also had a cow on the White House lawn. His background is quite interesting. He was a governor. He had a law degree. He was a governor of Ohio, governor general of the Philippines after the Spanish-American War, secretary of war. He was Teddy Roosevelt's successor as president, and he didn't follow Teddy Roosevelt's so-called progressive agenda. Teddy Roosevelt started this Bull Moose Party that split the Republican vote, and that's how Thomas Woodrow Wilson, he was known as Woodrow Wilson, but it was Thomas Woodrow Wilson, president. Oh, boy, we're still having this mind problem, but anyway, bear with me. After that, he really wanted to be Chief Justice of the United States, and he was the only president to have served in more executive offices in the federal government and also to have served as president and as Chief Justice of the United States. He appointed quite a few judges, about 38 federal judges. There's quite a few at that time. And also, he was involved with the appointment of the second Catholic, Edward. He's muted. I don't know what that means. Oh, no, now it's gone away. Okay, I'm sorry if you missed all that. We're still having some minor technical problems, and we'll get it all resolved. I want to. Oh, if you want to call in at 1-347-633-9620. That's 1-347-633-9620. It's also the birthday of James Fenimore Cooper. Those of you who remember The Last of the Mohicans. It was also a movie. And let's see, who else was born today? We have quite a few interesting people besides Oliver Stone. Excuse me. Oh, and Tommy Lee Jones. I think he was born in Texas, but he's been in several movies and a series called U.S. Marshal. He was the roommate of Albert Gore, Al Gore, the former vice president, at when the both of them were at Harvard. So they're both Stone and Tommy Lee Jones are 63 today, and I guess they're both still making movies. Among the things that people should be worried about are these violent, I see the Democrats or the radical Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives egged on by the lavender left, as I call it, to censor the congressman from South Carolina, which has always been a rebellious state. I think that's their motto, first in rebellion. And those of you who remember the Civil War, the first Fort Sumter is located in Charleston Harbor, and that's where the first shots were fired by the Confederates. In fact, the commander of the Fort Sumter was a Southerner, Major Anderson. It's very interesting, the loyalties at that time. But anyway, people have forgotten, or maybe they are ignoring it. Certainly the media is. They don't do any research, the morons in the media, that there have been many violent confrontations in Congress. And the first one was back around 1800 when a Southern congressman spat tobacco juice at a congressman, I think, from Connecticut. And I think he was censured for that, or certainly was criticized. We had the case of Senator Charles Sumner from Massachusetts during about, I think it was 1856, when there was the antebellum period in our history, when there was a lot of heated discussion within Congress about slavery and should slavery be extended, the Kansas-Nebraska Act, and, one the state was going to come in free. Which banned slavery, another state had to be a slave state. We're trying to balance things. But he was beaten. the goodwill and all of the efforts that they have made to pull themselves up by their bootstraps without being ripped off, or their bootstraps being ripped off by the poverty pimps in the black community, and I use that word guardedly, that they're appalled that this has become, if you're against, criticize the agenda or the plans or the administration's program, you are racist. Now, this is a typical trick of the communist and any totalitarian group when dissidents poke their head up and try to stand up and speak out, they try to slap them down or try the diversionary verbal tactic, oh, you're against us, and you know, you're an evil person, or you're a bad person, that kind of thing. So don't be deceived by these verbal diversionary tactics. The issue is the program and the agenda and these so-called czars, and some of these people are really bad. They, you know, it's almost, you know, living through the 60s with people like Stokely Carmichael, Patrice Lumumba in the Congo, and these black nationalists. We've had them in Berkeley. This guy Gus Newport, who suddenly surfaced again. All of these people, De'Army Bailey, all these black communists. You know, people have rejected that and want to move on. They realize these people know how to confiscate and consume wealth that other people create, but these same communists do not know how to create and conserve wealth. All they do is co-op. They infiltrate, subvert, and co-op, and when they can't control an organization, they will destroy. These are similar tactics worked out by Saul Alinsky, who I had to do a paper on. I had met him once when I took a SOCI class. I had to go down south side of Chicago and interview him. And interestingly, he died in Carmel, California. I don't know what he was doing out here. And Carmel is, as you know, a wealthy section. It's got the Monterey Language Institute. It's where a lot of wealthy people go. And Clint Eastwood, who I think should run for governor of California, was mayor down there. So it's a nice, wealthy hamlet, and it's interesting that Saul Alinsky died there in the 70s. He was up here in San Francisco where he set up some things, and I will show the sites where he operated out of and who fingered him at that time as being a social disruptor and subversive. But these are things that you don't hear from the current crop of media people, and that's one of the reasons they're considered to be morons, because they either ignore history or they are ignorant of it, and they make no effort to clean up their act and to research or have somebody do research for them and learn what has happened in the past, because it's repeating right now. The other thing is, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell opponents. Now, they were on, there's a new book out, by some propagandist who is at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And, of course, typically they omit the facts that one of the reasons the military and the security services around the world are leery and don't trust open homosexuals and even lesbians is because for the last 100 years there have been major security breaches, treachery, spying, espionage, the whole bit, and it goes all the way back to a French case of Captain Alfred Dreyfus, a famous case which still racks France today with anti-Semitism, which involved a Hungarian named Count Esterhazy, who somehow got into the French army, and he was running a male whorehouse in Paris. He knew Oscar Wilde, and this is documented in the latest film on Alfred Dreyfus. And anyway, he sold military secrets to the Germans after the Franco-Prussian War, and he fingered the Alfred Dreyfus, who was a fellow artillery officer, and Dreyfus was railroaded in one of the worst military trials in civilian politics in world history, and they sent him to Devil's Island for 9 years, and finally, after nearly 10 years, he was exonerated. But then we had, in World War One, we had Germans down, spies operating out of the New York waterfront, trying to subvert the seamen who were loading ships, sending munitions to the British. And also in World War II, a congressman was criticized for allegedly patronizing a male whorehouse by the Brooklyn Naval Yard, and this was operated by Nazi spies. The congressman claimed he was innocent, and it was never proven that he used the services of the boys at that brothel. And then during the war and after the war, we had the atomic bomb theft, the secrets, Burgess and McLean, two British Foreign Office officials who were communists and became communists when they were at Oxford and Cambridge, and were giving British military and diplomatic and secrets and facilitating the theft of the atomic bomb secrets to the Russians, along with Klaus Fuchs, who was a German. And before they were caught, they fled to Russia. In fact, and then there was Kim Philby, who fled to Russia. Interestingly, there was a film. It turned out to be a real dog. It talked about Philby, and Philby was probably bisexual. The film showed played down his role, the gay thing, but it did indicate that he had been spied and that he had fled to Russia when he was going to be unmasked. In the movie, the woman was played by actress Sharon Stone, who was the one-time wife, of the former publisher of the San Francisco Examiner, Phil Bronstein, whose great uncle was Leon Trotsky. A lot of people don't know that. Of course, they have learned this fact, they now realize why the San Francisco Hearst Examiner, because it's been bought by two different people since then, by the Fang family, and they sold it for $65 million, and then it was bought by the Angelus guy, multimillionaire out of Denver. So there's been three reincarnations of the Examiner. But anyway, Bronstein is now at the San Francisco Chronicle as executive editor, and it's gone even further left, and of course it's known as the gay voice of the Bay Area, or the gay cron, as its critics call it. And people are either stealing it out of the boxes. And you go to my YouTube site and you can see what we're talking about. Go to YouTube and then type in Amicus, AmicusVeritas, and we indicate what's been going on with newspapers. Now, people don't realize it, and I don't know if this is going on around the country. It costs $2, the Chronicle charges $2 on Sunday, and the driver, if those papers are stolen, it comes out of his pocket, but he only gets paid 25 cents out of the $2. The daily paper is sold, they've got a dollar on it, but it's sold for 75 cents. He gets a nickel. So, and the Chronicle gets the rest. So that's interesting. I don't know if somebody's trying to call in or what. I've tried, but that's what's going on, and people are very angry because they know the media is lying, and those of you who have been following the Tea Party protests, the Obamacare proposed health program, the bailouts, all these corporations and AIG. By the way, one of the reasons that they bailed out AIG is because AIG insures the congressmen, and congressmen have the premium health and life insurance. The reformers think that congressmen and women who are convicted of public corruption should have all of their pensions and their health care revoked, all of those rights revoked, because they have violated the public trust. Maybe we'll see that someday, and that'll be an impetus for these Congress people to behave themselves when they go to Washington. Yeah. So that's wishful thinking. Excuse me. Now, on Acorn, people are very surprised that they're running a brothel and doing all these subversions. We have been talking about this for several years, that these organizations are, in effect, they're not only real estate racketeers and poverty profiteers, but they're also have been ripping off. They've been using people as pimps and prostitutes and drug dealers. There's extortion that goes on. So what I, you know, so it's not surprising to us, but we'll be exposing more of this. We did it in our hard copy. I don't know what the heck's going on here, but anyway, good Lord. I thought somebody was trying to come in, but apparently it's not happening. So, what's going on? Turn on sound. Anyway, that's what's happening. So don't be surprised about Acorn. There'll probably be more shots, but they are tied into so many other organizations. It's like an ugly octopus with tentacles all over the bloody place, and or a giant squid. And just as you try, you close in on them and try to expose them, they try to camouflage themselves like a squid. I think that's more appropriate for them. But eventually, their karma had to catch up with them. But they're not the only ones who've been ripping off the public. They're who have been subverting the public trust, engaging in vote fraud, real estate racketeering, and this pedophilia, prostitution, and pornography, because that's all tied in. That has not come out in a lot of the conservative or even the other media, but it will. In fact, we documented that HUD-funded subsidized housing in this area where the operators were extorting money up to $500 to get preferential housing treatment or to get in a housing project. They were bringing in drugs. There was prostitution. There was vote fraud registration. So all these things. And these are people who were connected to APORN and some of these other organizations like the Center for Third World Organizing. And, of course, I regret to say, but again, Nancy Pelosi supports these organizations. She looks to them for votes and to do voter registration and to go out and get votes when she is running for office. She was truly working the streets, and people interpret that any way they want. And people and the concerned citizens are very upset with her behavior because they're paying for it, and they will continue to pay for it until they get her out of there. Maybe she'll retire. I don't think she's going to resign, but maybe she'll retire at the next year, and we'll be rid of her. Barbara Boxer can write, her ghostwriter can finally surface, and they both can get credit for the books that they've been writing or trying to write. The other thing, and then Dianne Feinstein. It's very interesting. People who watched the joint session of Congress. The cameras had focused on Dianne Feinstein at one point, and you know, it's interesting. One of her husbands, she's been married a number of times. She was married to a judge, Jack Berman. It was her first husband, and they got divorced. And then she married a doctor from Canada named Bertrand Feinstein, who had many, that's why she keeps the name, I don't know why, who had many malpractice lawsuits against him. He was a brain surgeon, and he's dead. Then she married this guy, Richard Blum, and all of a sudden, these two became fabulously wealthy. So people are still asking the question, where did all that money come from? Of course, she also blocked an audit of the San Francisco Housing Authority, the worst housing authority in the country. The other thing, excuse me, I don't know what this problem is, but you should ask the question in your own neighborhood, of your own city government. It's your right to go down to the city hall or the county offices to find out these community development officers who is granting and steering money to these controversial organizations. Acorn is just one of them. It's one of the worst, but there are others. There are, I think, Citizens Action. There's Tides Foundation. There are many. We'll put them up. And there is the U.S. Congressman, I think it's a guy named Daryl Issa from Southern California. He has investigated them, so you should support his efforts. But, you know, the world goes on, and we have got to get beyond this racism that every time black is criticized, or Hispanic, or a Jewish person is, and these people want to divert attention from their deeds. They trot out the old racism. It used to be, if I can paraphrase, I think it was Jonathan Swift, that patriotism was the last refuge of a scoundrel. It seems that racism, or cries of racism, is the first refuge. But don't be deceived. Use your head. Use that muscle between your ears. And you have a right to speak out. You have a right to question these things. And, you know, it's interesting that of all the Tea Parties, and we've filmed several of these, we don't see people calling Obama, using the N-word, or even calling him an African. And, of course, I disagree. And a lot of other people disagree with this African American or this Hispanic American. Be an American. If you're born here, you don't have that designation on your U.S. passport or on your birth certificate, or you shouldn't. And in my own family, one of my nephews, he's got about 10 ethnic groups in his background, and I told him once, I said, you know, don't be using, your Chinese, Filipino, or Chinese, Hispanic. That isn't going to fly. Or Chinese Polish. His mother's half Polish, my niece. But I said, on your passport, you're designated as an American. Be proud. Hold your head up high. Salute the flag. You know, be a patriot. And he's a good kid. And I think he got the message, and I think other youth out there should wake up and get away from this ethnic diversity garbage, because all it does, it's diversive. It's divisive, excuse me. And you look at these countries, you look at Spain and the Basque, they're still fighting and killing people over there over this regional issue. And then you've had these other countries, the problems in the Balkans, the problems in the former Soviet Union, this ethnic fighting in with the Uyghurs up in northern China. Do we really need that here in America? I don't think so. Is that what you want? I don't think so. So, you know, when they pull this stuff, say no. I'm an American. That's what I was born, or that's what I became naturalized, and that's what I'm going to be. And you're not going to change that. In one of my interviews, and we're about ready to put excerpts of these interviews up, was with Trevor Hodges. He was the last British and American survivor of Gallipoli, and in World War II, he served in the U.S. Army. After he had emigrated in the 20s, he emigrated to the United States. And we discussed this whole business, and he says, you know, when I became naturalized, I became an American. I'm not a Brit. And, you know, even though he had served in the British Army and survived Gallipoli, that horrible mismanaged war campaign in World War I, it almost worked, but they had the feeble-minded or weak-kneed military executives running things over there. And had they won it, Churchill would have been right, and they would have shortened the war by knocking Turkey out. But you can follow that. It's a very popular issue. The other thing is the people used to think two things about Afghanistan or Afghans. Those who were into dogs knew that it was a breed of dog, one of the oldest. Those who were into knitting and all that to make an Afghan sweater knew, that was the relationship in their mind to Afghan. And those who were into drugs, hash, and traveling to that part of the world, that was Afghanistan. But General Brigadier Ingalls, he didn't like to be called general. He was very specific. He had gone to Sandhurst, which is the British version of West Point. One of his classmates, he had served with David Niven, the great British actor. And Niven, in the movie, the Charge of the Light Brigade, the first version, there's been a second version that's come out in 1968, Tony Richardson, is quite different. But anyway, David Niven played a captain in that movie, and they were talking about, and it's very accurate, that the Russians were stirring up trouble on what the northwest frontier, which is Afghanistan, and what is Pakistan today, was considered the northwest frontier. And the British had sent four armies in there different times, and each time they got their British butts kicked by the Afghans. And his view, General Brigadier Ingalls' view, is that Pakistan, we should stay out of it. Pakistan should stay out of Afghanistan, and we should, because we had discussed this. And it should, in effect, be contained. But, of course, there's this business about the pipeline. And, of course, Americans are not going to give up their oil. And as you can see, oil is back up, at least out here, about $3.10 a gallon. And, you know, we can't afford that with all these people, even who have given up their clunkers. And now this is coming up. People should think about this. People who are thinking of even taking the General Motors deal of 60 days free trial. If you don't like it, we'll give you your money back, depending on what you put into it. But people are now beginning to realize that those who had clunkers, so-called clunkers, and bought these new cars, are they going to be able to continue to make the payments, or to make the payments after January, or even before then? So that's something. And are they going to have to be bailed out like people who got involved in these messy mortgages and are facing default or are in foreclosure? There's a lot more foreclosures out there than the media is talking about, and people should be aware that, you know, it's a glut of these houses, depending on where you're at. And in fact, they were just talking about Nevada. Or Nevada, it depends on your pronunciation. And Harry Reid's got a major problem here. I don't know where this guy came from. But if he is defeated by Tartakian, whose father is the famous basketball coach at the University of Nevada at Las Vegas, if he's defeated, he will be the first majority leader in 50 years to be defeated for re-election. The last one was, I think, Scott Lucas, who was the senior senator from the state of Illinois. And he was the majority leader, I think, around 1948. I think he was defeated by Everett Dirksen, who was known as the oil can. He had a great, deep voice. Excuse me. But I would recommend people going to our YouTube sites. We are putting more stuff up, and it's all going to be relevant. Also, there'll be more information on how to deal with these controversial insurance companies when you have a legitimate claim, and how you can protect yourself from unscrupulous claims adjusters and their managers, because this happens, and I know people very close to me that this has happened to, and I've tried to advise them. Excuse me. So that's the thing. The other thing is, again, they keep pandering this myth that illegal aliens or illegal immigrants are going to be barred from getting government-funded health care. They already get it now under the public health mandates in the Code of Federal Regulations. All you got to do, and I should have put this up, go to Book 45 of the Code of Federal Regulations. These are in your public libraries or in your law libraries if you have access to one. But the Code of Federal Regulations and the United States Code, all the books are in the public library, and they have to get medical care under that law. Now, this is what's happening. Very interesting. People who are going into the hospitals now, when they check in at the desk, they're demanding ID. So, you know, they're beginning to crack down. I don't know if it's because of the threat of terrorism, although that hasn't come up. But it's certainly in the back of some security people's minds. Or there may be medical insurance fraud going on. But they're now demanding picture ID. So this is what's happening here in Northern California at some of the hospitals and medical care facilities. And it may be going on or maybe starting around the country. So if you have to go to a hospital, be prepared to have a verifiable picture ID. That's the nature of the way things are. Maybe eventually we'll all get a national health card like they have in France. Okay, that's a possibility. I think they also have one in Canada. I'm working on getting a Canadian doctor who's working down here in the States. I met him the other day when I had to go in for a physical. I'm going to try to talk him into giving an interview because he would be unique. He's worked in Canada, and now he's working down here in the States, and that would be an interesting get his perspective. We did talk briefly about the proposed health care and all the controversies, and he did say that both systems, from what he has seen, having been, he's a native Canadian, worked in Canada, and he's working down here in the States. Both systems have problems. And that's what we've been saying all along, that you've got to look at all the systems, look at their problems, and look at the benefits and the efficiencies they have in each of these systems, and then put something together on the basis of that, or graft it onto existing resources. That's I don't know why we need a whole new infrastructure that's going to cost billions of dollars over the long run when we already have a basis of a HMO that's there are 4,000 of these around the country and they're already funded and they're available to people of low income or no income and even to illegal aliens. You may not like that, but that's what's in the code right now. I don't see how we can deny emergency care to these people and then turn them over to immigration, naturalization, or Homeland Security. I think that's what it's called now. But these are the irrefutable facts that these people can't get that care. Now, it is also a fact that because they're supposed, except in San Francisco and Berkeley, they're supposed to inform INS if the person coming in for medical care is an illegal. So once they get the care, they're supposed to be turned over. But they defy that in San Francisco, where the motto of the city is anything goes and does and has. So be aware of that. So that's a phony, that's a red herring, this business of illegal aliens being ineligible to get health care because they already get it. And they also get maternity, all of that. And, of course, that's where this business of these anchor babies comes from, because these women are pregnant or they get pregnant here and they have their babies here. And that they're born here, even if they're in the country illegally, those children are American citizens, like it or not, unless we change the law. And there are people who want to do that. But, again, go to and also go to our website, AmicusVeritas.org, AmicusVeritas, .org, and we have Free the Sailor. The Stephen Neri case is heating up. There are going to be some new developments. A mini-documentary is in the works to explain this awful case that's been going on for 13 years. And a fund has been set up. It's been in existence, just no money's been coming into it, just a little to keep it going. Free the Sailor. That's the legal and expenses fund was set up. And also, those of you who are interested in vote fraud, we'll be updating our vote fraud, California's Against Vote Fraud. That's also part of the website and our blog. And then again, our YouTube site, AmicusVeritas. There is a wide variety and eclectic number of videos up there, and one of them I'm surprised people haven't paid attention to. Those of you who drive and who drive around your city and you encounter these no turn on red signs that are like 24 hours, and the signs are not justified at that posting because there's no traffic after certain hours. And what you do is you sit there and you're burning gas, and for all the green people and environmentalists, you are adding carbon footprints to the air. And if you, by chance, you defy the sign and make your right turn, and there happens to be a cop there, and it's that time of the month where he hasn't met his traffic ticket quota, and believe me, these cops do have quotas. It's illegal, but they have them, and they're particularly vigilant near the end of the month in certain cities. And so you get, if you make that illegal turn and a no turn on red, when there's no traffic, you could get socked with a $200 ticket, depending. And of course, usually if you're on your cell phone, it could be even worse. And believe it or not, people are still texting. They're still yakking on the phone. And it seems that there are more pedestrians who are yakking on the phone while crossing the street, not paying attention. So maybe we ought to start blasting our horns at them. But anyway, we'll be back on Thursday, and I hope to have an interview then. So thank you for tuning in. You can email me at... pverzola, V-E-R-Z-O-L-A, pverzola @gmail.com. If you have suggestions, criticism, or ideas, we'd love to hear from you. This is Peter Paul Verzola, working with The Shadow. Thank you for listening. And we'll see you, or nope, we'll be over the airwaves or the blogosphere on Thursday. Thanks again for tuning in. Well, we're down to 20 seconds, and I don't like dead airspace. And also, I'd like to know, what do you think of the theme we're using? If you think, if it's, if you've got other suggestions, let me know. I was thinking of bringing a Cole Porter one in. Anything goes. It's applicable to a lot of these politicians. But anyway, thank you.